tonight, holding a key, fits in a lock, opens the door, shows you a room, it's holding a heart, it's pumping the blood, it's feeding your brain with information, sweet information.
Very nice. I didn't see you listening there. This is John Hodgman. I'm here with Jonathan Colton. We're in the grand parlor of his gigantic submarine as it secretly trawls the bottom of the East River. And we're just working on the new theme song for the Little Grey Book lectures when we resurface this February. And I think it sounds pretty good.
Thanks. I'm pretty happy with it so far.
You know, I'm glad you're here, because one of the things I was thinking would be fun to do at this point would be to go over to the old aquaphone there and dial up some of the lectures we've done in the past. I'm thinking back particularly to March of 2003 with our Little Grey Book lecture. I believe it was number 17.
Yes. Fantastic lecture.
And that was on the subject of how to generate a winning character. And if I'm correct, it was on the subject overall of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Do you remember that one?
I remember it happening. I was not actually there, however.
Oh, that's right. That was back when we had Marshall Crenshaw doing our music.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have a submarine, did he?
No, not anymore.
One of the things that I enjoyed about that lecture were these haiku that Joshua Behrman sent in. Joshua Behrman is a writer from Los Angeles with a very unusually spelled name. It's Joshua with an H on the end. And this particular strange spelling, I think, is what speculated or led a lot of people to speculate that he didn't actually exist. That and the fact that he made me read his haiku and stayed on the opposite coast while it happened. But he does exist. He's a very smart writer and a very clever fellow who did come and read at a different lecture later on. But in this case, I read his work on his behalf, and I paid him nothing. There were 13 of them, but the 13th one we discarded in order to get 12 so that we could decide which one to read by rolling a 12-sided die, appropriately enough. Maybe you want to dial that up there on the old aquaphone there, and
I'll listen to it again? I'll see if I can punch it up here. Just give me a moment.
Yeah, don't forget to turn the crank this time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I have a D12 roll, please? Oh, good. Running from bugbears, turning corners, torch-lit halls. Is that a roper? That was the one of the many haiku that we read that evening. Another thing that we did was that we actually generated a lot of Dungeons & Dragons characters and then encouraged two young men whom I had met at a gaming shop in Greenfield, Massachusetts, to come down and actually play around in Dungeons & Dragons for the people in the audience who had never seen or heard of this game, which is, unfortunately, the game is you know, rapidly dwindling in popularity due to the hatred of dragons and the computer gaming.
Not to mention the hatred of dungeons.
Yes, and the hatred of and.
Yes.
Boy, you know, it's really amazing how that laughter echoes here in the submarine.
It's pretty empty without a crowd.
If I could only describe the room that I'm in, it is truly magnificent. It's gigantic. It's got to be 3,000 square foot ballroom with marble flooring and giant columns and sculptures of Jonathan Colton holding tridents all over the place. It's really quite an amazing submarine.
That's actually me as Neptune.
Oh, I just thought you were holding a trident.
No, it's supposed to be Neptune, but it's kind of sort of, it's like it has my face on it.
Yeah, but you have a trident, though, don't you?
Yeah, not like that.
I mean, I've seen you carrying one before, so.
I have a smaller trident.
I just thought it was supposed to be.
I can understand the confusion.
But he's wearing a nice J. Crew shirt. Neptune wear?
No, I guess that's...
Is that the part?
He has my head and also my torso and my shirt.
So the only thing about it is the trident that makes you Neptune? You think that's what makes you Neptune?
Yeah. Well, that's what makes the sculpture Neptune.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't discount the submarine, though. That helps.
that does contribute to the air of seaworthiness.
Yeah. Well, dial up the old aquaphone there and see if we can't hear this game of Dungeons & Dragons as it was played by Art Chung, Dungeon Master, and two fellows from a gaming shop in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
Let me see if I have that here.
Now we'll have the demonstration of skill that I discussed earlier. As I mentioned, I was not really a Dungeons & Dragons player. And for the one or two of you who also weren't, who are here tonight, you might want to see how the game actually goes and hear about some of the strategies that go into an actual game. So I was recently in Greenfield, Massachusetts at the Smiling Griffin Book and Game Shop, and I met two guys there who curiously have the same names as guys who have appeared on this stage before. So please welcome veteran campaigners Mike Handelman and David Guillon. All right, let's move along here. Why don't you assign them their characters or whatever needs to happen next?
Why don't you just roll a six-sided die? Okay.
Ha!
You are a dwarf fighter, level 2. You are an elven magic user, also level 2.
A what? An elven magic user?
Elven, yes.
Okay.
Guys, you've got to yell to be heard the way this is oriented.
Okay. How's that? Do you have names for your characters?
I am Valentor. I am Icarish.
Is that like Icarus with a lisp?
My elven clan would not take so lightly to such a joke were they here today. Nor would the staff of Ralamesh, should she be activated.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and start? I noticed you took down the DM screen. Is that because you don't need it for this particular module?
I've pretty much internalized all the rules and the maps, so I think we're okay. But this does come from something called the Secret of Bone Hill, as you're all aware.
Can I see that for a second? The Secret of Bone Hill. This is Dungeon Module L1 by Leonard Lokofka. I always liked his work. All right, here you go.
All right. Some days ago, at a tavern much like this one, you first heard of the legend surrounding Bone Hill. Many years ago, a mighty wizard built a castle on Bone Hill. He was rarely seen, but in the dead of night, strange creatures could be seen entering the castle doors. Then one night, a great storm came in from the west, and the night sky was lit up with a thunderous clap, and the very castle came crashing down. Now only ruins remain. After several flagons of ale, you decide to go exploring.
Perchance we would not be so bold otherwise.
You ride out to Bone Hill, where indeed the walls of a great castle lie in ruins. Suddenly, Icarus finds a stairwell leading downstairs.
I say we descend, my friends. I only hope that Lolth, Queen of the Demon Pits, isn't within.
Either that or the dread basilisk. I fear him greatly.
So you go downstairs?
Yes.
Yes.
You're in a long corridor heading south and downwards. The walls are damp and clammy and appear to be in almost state of collapse.
I use my amulet of hearing.
You hear a low moan followed by some insane laughing. And then it goes away.
I'm going to ready my mace of disruption.
Okay, your mace is readied. There is a door at the opposite end of the corridor, about 50 feet away. As you open the first door, you see a couple of rats scurry around your feet.
I will smite the rats.
Are they giant? Are they giant rats or normal rats?
They appear to be normal rats. They are sort of nipping at your feet.
Then I will leave them to
my eager friend.
I will smite the rats.
I think you should roll.
Ha!
That's a hit.
That should be a hit for a puny rat.
There's a sort of thud. And the rat dies.
We are victorious, it seems. We proceed cautiously.
But first, I would like to place the dead rat in my sack of holding.
Very well, it's in your sack. It starts to smell.
I ignore the smell.
Okay. So how are you walking down the corridor?
Cautiously. Cautiously, with great, great caution.
Who's walking first?
He is. I hold the staff of Ralamesh at the ready.
Okay. As you're walking down the hall, you set off a trap. Spikes come out of the ground, and you receive 2 hit die damage. 2 hit points of damage. Mark that down.
Just me?
No, him. He was first.
Oh, for a healing balm.
As you get to the second door, there's a sign on the door.
I will read the sign.
The sign says, "Beware, beware, lest greed for plunder, the earthen one's chains doth burst asunder." It's just a warning.
I will smite open the door.
The door opens slowly, creaking, and you enter another room, which is about 20 by 20 square. There are 2 skeletons lying in the southeast corner, and there's another pair of double doors which lies to the south. It also appears to be a corridor leading to the west, which is darker.
I use my amulet of hearing.
You hear nothing.
We proceed cautiously.
I would like to keep an eye on the skeletons, for they may be of that feared race of creatures known as the undead.
The skeletons aren't moving. There's a door to the south with what seems to be a message.
We read the message.
With caution.
The sign on the door says, "Say the magic words and receive your just reward."
Rigged up.
I would like to back up at this point.
No.
The magic word is not red dot.
I didn't say red dot. I said regged up.
Okay, I think.
You know, I think it's very well played. And you guys, the bus back to Greenfield is going to be coming pretty soon. So if you don't mind just moving along, okay, that's fine. Thank you very much.
It's a shame I was not able to activate my staff of Ragolash.
Well, I agree with you. It is a shame. Thank you very much. Art Chung, Dungeon Master, David Guillon, and Mike Handelman. Back here on the submarine with Jonathan Colton. If you were listening to that, you might have heard as well the voice of Chris Daly, our longtime technical consultant, who occasionally, in those early days when we weren't using microphones, but in fact just giant, bullhorns, that we had to really shout. And Chris was very frustrated with that. And that's how we introduced the microphone policy, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also recommended that, for profession's sake, we should all carry tridents on stage.
Yeah.
And
that's kind of my idea, too.
I gotta say, Marshall Crenshaw was talking about it, too. So it's not, yeah. I mean, yeah. You had the best trident, let's say. You had obviously invested in a good one.
Yeah.
And we all appreciated that.
Yeah.
But it's not like the idea wasn't out there.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But let's just say that it was certainly an integral part of the Little Gray Book lectures from then on.
Yeah, I think it has become...
Yeah, and obviously we have used them ever since. And you can hear them in this clip that's coming up, this final haiku that I read, actually, a work of Joshua Behrman, who I didn't pay. D&D haiku cycle number 6. Dude has some long hair and always brings his own dice. Is he like 20? Well, there you have it from Little Grey Book Lecture number 17. I hope that you will remember to join us for Little Grey Book Lecture number 30 coming up this February 24 on the subject of the American presidents, or presidents who had hooks for hands, or who is buried in Grant's tomb. We're still deciding on that. We're trying to finish the theme song, but we're glad to give you this little preview. It'll be February 24 at Galapagos Art Space, and we look forward to seeing you there, and we look forward to getting out of this submarine, because, frankly, the Coast Guard's quest of vengeance against us is wrong-headed. We're only trying to bring you some information and a decent stage show and now a decent podcast. Is that right, Jonathan?
Yeah. Also, it kind of stinks in here.
Yes. Yes, it does. I blame the porpoises.
As do I.
I think they need to be kept in water from now on.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Could we, maybe let's get to work on that theme song.
Right.
And tonight, holding a key, fits in a lock, opens the door, shows you a room, it's holding a heart, it's pumping the blood.